Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Hi, I'm Faith Saley, and I don't mean to brag, but I played a singing, genetically enhanced mutant named Serena Douglas on DS9, and you are listening to The Greatest Discovery.
Captain!
Not here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
And we have a really special guest today, the host of PRI's Fair Game. It's Faith Saley.
I didn't realize we took the time machine back to 2008. Thank you very much.
You were like one of my OG podcasts. I listened to Fair Game like every single day when it was in production.
Do you see my face? It's like you're giving me bittersweet feelings. Like, actually, it makes me happy and it causes me pain. That show was so fun. And it was one of the first podcasts ever.
Yeah. It was what is now Bullseye with Jesse Thorne were my on-ramp to podcasting, and now it's what I do for a living. So I have a lot of appreciation for the trail you blazed.
Oh gosh, thank you,
Faith. I just want to say I haven't heard Fair Game, but I am a big fan of the 2010 film starring Naomi Watts and Sean Penn.
You can't break me. I don't have a breaking.
Oh, yes, about Valerie Plame. Nice. Yeah. I like that. Nice.
I thought were spectacular in that movie.
Thank you so much. You know, a lot of people missed my performance, but it was there. I was mute because that's my thing.
That's your thing. Yeah, that's typecasting. Yeah.
But Faith, you're also here because you were on Deep Space Nine, a two-episode arc that spanned two seasons as Serena Douglas.
That's like a rainbow of an arc. That's a long arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a long arc. And I mean, like, one of the things that's amazing about Deep Space Nine is how much they will take a character that you might not have expected to get another crack at and given dimensionality to. And your character is one of my favorite examples of that. You're like almost catatonic in the first episode that you're in. And I read that you had some lines written for you that didn't wind up. Did they get shot and cut, or they just not even shoot them?
There's so much to dig into. Yes, you are correct. So I get cast as Serena Douglas, and it was... Adam, I think it was you. I listened to the podcast where you talked about Chrysalis, and you were wondering if I got... Oh, no, it must have been the podcast where you talked about statistical probabilities, the first one, where you wondered if I got paid as an extra. And I'll have you know, sir, that was actually my first... It wasn't my first time on TV, but it was my first guest star single billing. My name appeared on the screen all by itself at the beginning of the episode. And so I got paid just as much as everybody else, I think.
That's great.
I wasn't saying it to make fun. I was saying it in defense of you.
Thank you. I worked really hard with my face. Right.
Yeah.
We talk about this all the time. Like, Star Trek throws these like totally unique challenges at actors. Like, hey, your character
doesn't we will never see their eyes, or you will be under 10 pounds of prosthetic makeup, or your character doesn't speak but has a really important role to play in moving the story forward. And that's what your first episode on Deep Space Nine was like.
That's right. And I remember going out, and you know, we filmed it in Burbank in August, so you would be on this dark set, and you go outside and the sun was blinding, and there would be all those people in prosthetic and like zipped up unitards smoking, and I'm just like, they, like, when do you pee? Like, they should have been paid 15 times more than I get just to get out of those costumes. I waited that whole week of filming for my scene where I got to speak, and I think it was shot on the last day, and it was a very emotional scene. And I even remember thinking, like, and this is a bad thing for an actor to think. It's a really bad thing for an actor to think. But I remember thinking, I want to cry. I want to nail the scene. And I also want to have tears flowing down my cheeks to wipe off that kabuki white makeup that made me look like.
You want to do the award show clip moment.
I was going to win like a guest star Emmy for that.
Uh-huh.
And we shot it. And we did shoot it. And I also remember Anson Williams, the director, was so supportive during that scene, you know, because it was like the one day that not all the Jack Pack, what do you all call them? Like the lame X-Men.
Yeah.
They weren't there. This was like my time to shine. And we shot it. And I think I achieved welling tears. I don't remember that I achieved tears streaming down my face. But I'm going to tell you, well, now that we're talking about tears, there's a very sad story attached to this, which is that at the time we were shooting, my mother was dying.
Oh.
And we all knew she was dying. But she was so happy she was 53. She was in Florida. I was spending as much time with her as possible. I flew back because I got this part. And she was so happy, right? I'd been in LA for a year, and this was like, mm-hmm. this was the big part. And yeah. And so I was very sad then anyway, even though the experience was very, very fun. But I wanted her to see the episode. I wanted her to be able to see the episode on TV. She died a month before it aired. And so it aired on Thanksgiving. And if I recall, it was either like the day before or the day after, but it was right around Thanksgiving. And so I'm there with my brothers and their partners and my dad. And it's like, let's all do this. So we sit down.
Big moment.
And like this big scene where I finally get to talk is supposed to happen about, you know, like three quarters of the way through the at the climax. And we're all just ready, like goes to commercial. Okay, when it comes back, y'all, this is my scene. And they cut out the lines. And it was like, oh. And of course, at that time, I didn't know that they would have me back in a year to sing a freaking aria. So it was a bit of an oof in the gut.
That's such a big part of being an actor, too, is like that you put the work in and then you have no control over how it is used in the edit.
That's right.
That's just a scary like leap to make in some ways.
Did you call Anson Williams on Thanksgiving?
I said, Potsy, and we were like, you motherfucker. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's try playing Splish Blast. That'll really get him.
He was so playful and fun and super, like a super good director. Just really clear vision. But
when I watch that episode, I can tell you're having fun.
Right. She's silly. She's really just silly, isn't she?
Right.
Behind all the mute and like 1,000-yard stares, there's a real joie de vivre.
Really is.
I'm constantly telling my wife when I'm expressionless and staring into the middle distance that I actually am having fun at this dinner party, I promise.
I'm just genetically enhanced, and you are not, so you don't see it. No, we used to laugh. There's so many shots of me in the background, like putting my hands on the wall, and they used to, the crew, Tim Ransom, who played Jack, Michael Keenan, who played Patrick, and Hillary Shepherd, who played Lauren, they would be like, all right, Faith, go play the wall. Like, we had this joke that it was like, all right, we're about to begin, go play something on the wall.
You joke, but like watching your performance in that episode, it's so like you're not miming or being clowny or anything. And I feel like it's got to be so hard to do what you did in that episode and not draw attention to yourself in a silly way.
Thank you very much. You all said such kind and really, I don't know if you have acting backgrounds, but really insightful, perspicacious even, things when you talked about the episode. And it was really, God, it's 24 years ago, but it was very gratifying to have that recognized. I did really need to be like ever present, but yeah, in the background. And I appreciate that. Thank you.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, your ever presence is very funny because like you will like start walking across the room in one shot, and like the camera will cut around and you'll just kind of like be behind an actor.
It's saying it is
like there's something very, very funny about the way that you did that, and the blocking must have been tricky because it, like, you have to be in the right spot in the room for the right lines as the camera cuts.
That's exactly right. I had to remember what part of the wall I was playing. It's true. And then you just see like there are some shots, and by the way, y'all, I had not, we can go into this if you want, but for various reasons, I had not watched these two episodes for 23 years. I only watched them a few weeks ago for the first time since they aired because someone, a journalist, interviewed me about it for StarTrek.com. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, and it brought up lots of emotions. But what I did, what I wasn't prepared for, was to laugh out loud just seeing my 26-year-old self sort of like walk across the screen in like a catatonic state.
Yeah, you like invented photo bombing with this character.
Yes!
that's really wild that you hadn't revisited this in such a long time. And I mean, we just reviewed these episodes for our show, The Greatest Generation, so they feel very recent to me. But yeah, like thinking about this as being 24 years ago is a trip. And it doesn't feel like there are episodes of Star Trek that don't hold up, and we talk about that a lot. But these feel like kind of uniquely timeless. And I mean, I think that they're really well written, but they also like get at some stuff that, you know, Star Trek tackled issues like intellectual diversity and
augmentation. Yeah, neurodiversity. And I mean, implicitly, it's like about autism and people.
Right.
I completely agree. I was kind of blown away by how relevant and kind of trenchant the episode themes were.
Maybe like the high wire act is in that second episode that you did, because it's got the issue of a doctor and a patient falling in love with each other, and that like I read that that the scene where you and Dr. Bashir, when your character and Dr. Bashir kiss, was reshot like a month later, mm-hmm. because the way they shot it the first time, he comes off as predatory. And Star Trek is littered with times when a male character comes off as predatory and it's not addressed.
Yeah.
And
I mean, that was a really prescient sort of recognition on the part of the writers and producers of that episode. And, you know, in filming it the first time, I didn't experience it as predatory. I experienced it as Alexander Siddig having just smoked a cigarette right before he kissed me.
Oh, and come on.
And Nana Visitor not being very happy about the scene. But
Was she just off camera, like watching you?
So the truth is, it would be unfair to say yes. The truth is, I don't remember. I just remember she wasn't. And I don't blame her. Like, she wasn't, like, the warmest during that week when and if I saw her, which was rarely, right? Because we didn't really have any scenes together except, I think, one.
Yeah.
I just remember being like, that's rude. I'm sorry, that's rude. Like, it is rude to smoke right before you kiss somebody. Yeah.
Yeah. At least throw a Tic Tac in if you're going to do it.
But, you know? But yes, exactly. But it's, first of all, that scene where we kiss provided, if not my favorite line I've ever uttered as an actor, at least it's right in the top three, which is like think about having to sell the line where you say, you know, what's a girl supposed to do when she wakes up from a long sleeve? Point to one of those specks of light out there, pack her bags, and go make a life for herself?
You still got it, Faith.
Thank you, Adam. And honestly, I think what was so, and you alluded to this when you talked about the episode, what was so kind of fun and challenging about playing the, you know, woken up Serena was like zero subtext, right? So actors are always, we're always mining for subtext and how many different ways can we deliver this line and how many different things can we say with a simple line. And when Serena is awakened, she's guileless and she's not, and she's charming and lovable, but not flirtatious. And and she's not, she's never, she's impressive to other people, but she's never showing off her intellect. It's just a matter of fact to her. And it was really, it was just really fun to play that kind of part. I don't know that I've ever played anything since that's so straightforward and guileless.
So when you were called back a month later to reshoot The Kiss...
Was Nana there for that also?
you went to a convenience store and you bought a pack of unfiltered Marlboro Reds and you smoked them all in the car on the way there, right?
And, yeah, but then you couldn't smoke on the set, so I put dip in my mouth. Oh, and I was like, I'm gonna give him tongue.
Did you eat a rack of Oreos also?
I'll give you a little Easter egg. My hair is much longer in the when they reshot The Kiss, like it was what they call a fall, which is like a very 1960s term for hair. It's like they had attached hair because my hair when we first shot was longer, and then when we came back for the next season, it was shorter. So they had attached hair to make my hair longer, and they didn't have that wig handy. So they made I'm wearing a much longer wig, which I think looks more fetching in the in the Kiss scene. Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Costume and makeup carries so much weight in those episodes for you, especially like you really bounce back and forth between, you know, the dark circles, pale look to like you're like really looking alive when you've mentally woken. What was that like for you day to day to like look at yourself in the mirror like, ugh, and then and then have the good days when you're feeling like you have blood going to all of your extremities?
It was, I know, like pinching my cheeks when nobody's looking. It was a an adjustment when I first was cast as Serena to be like, here I am with like a big guest star on a very big show. That was a very big show then with serious close-ups, and I look awful. when it came to filming Chrysalis, where I got to shine, I didn't mind because I was like, oh, I know what's coming. I know what's coming. I'm going to have like a little blush. I'm going to have a little mascara. And you know, one of you, I think it was you, Adam, one of you had a very impressive comment for a heterosexual man about how they chose an Empire waist dress for me to wear.
Oh, yeah.
when I have my big reveal, it's not sexy librarian. It's like very chaste. I looked very chaste. I even remember watching the episode when it aired with a friend and her 9-year-old daughter, and her daughter's named Charlotte, and she was super British. She goes, "Mommy, is Faith pregnant there?" I remember her mother going, "Shh, no."
Empire waist is basically the only fashion terminology I know.
I'm impressed. And if you want to knock it up a level, to say Empire waist.
Whoa.
See, that's a very Ben thing. Ben's a Francophile, the Francophile of the show. So
that moment could have felt she's all that, and it really doesn't. And I think that it's also just an awkward scene because like the other augments are a little bit offended that they didn't get invited to the fun party,
did.
And it's got so much more weight on it than just coming down the stairs in a beautiful gown. Oh, when she takes her glasses off, she's super beautiful.
Yeah, with
who
the
knew?
Hair in slow motion. Yeah, it was smart to make the sex pot the one who like does the, you know, what is it, the Molly Ringwald, Ally Sheedy do over, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I just needed to play it kind of shyly and excited, and again, not coy. It was fun.
Rewatching them, I was thinking about the cut lines in that first episode, and I was wondering if you had to like take the character back to the drawing board a little bit in developing a character that goes from like totally nonverbal to starting to speak and then sing. Like, did the lines that you spoke the first time you shot this character jibe with that like those early moments when Serena is kind of like not even like able to hear her own voice.
It's so hard to remember. I know that they weren't delivered in like a Faith Saley self-possessed voice. And I know that they were very few lines. I think they may have been monosyllabic, but they still counted. It still hurt to have them cut. Yeah. But it was really, and again, like when I shot the second episode, this is 23 years ago when none of us was just like talking about the things we talk about now in terms of sensitivity and considering differently able communities. I do remember a conversation where we needed to make sure I wasn't making fun of deaf people. And yet I do sound as if I have hearing loss, right? Because we knew I didn't have the sense of cadence and pitch.
It's interesting that they gave that moment to Jack, though, to like make fun of you for it. It weirdly like de-weaponizes what could have been like an unintentional joke there by making it an intentional joke and putting it in his mouth.
And then shaming him for saying
right.
it.
Right, exactly.
That he's the jerk that brought it up.
Yeah.
It was very smart. Yeah. And I think now's the time that I need to let you know that, when did we film that? We filmed that in 1998. That 8 years after we filmed that episode, the actor who plays Jack, Tim Ransom, and I fell in love.
Wow. Like,
we had a relationship for a year.
What?
No way.
Yes.
After he was so mean to you about the way you sounded when you started speaking?
Isn't that juicy? Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
And like, it's not like we kept in touch. I mean, this was like during the end days of my first marriage. Like I was separated. And
did you run into him in a convention or something? Like, how does that even work?
I was doing Fair Game. I had moved from LA to New York and he was living in New York.
I could tell something was going on listening to the episodes. I was like, I think that the Faith has a new romance in her life. There's something.
Serena's getting some. and he was living in New York and he had my old email and he reached out to me. And
wow.
And it was like, it was... So I'm telling you all that because I think it's like extremely juicy trivia and I adore Tim Ransom, but also not having seen the episodes for 23, 24 years, watching him, whom I know now in many other ways, I think he is hilarious. He is so obnoxious and fantastic and like just like staccato. It's like a David Mamet play on Deep Space Nine without the cursing.
Yeah. He really like Kool-Aid mans his way into that first scene in that first episode. Like just like takes over the screen. He's like, okay, this is going to be a really intense character. Speaking of conventions, do you ever go to Star Trek conventions? Have you done that life?
I have once, and it was when I was doing a story for CBS Sunday Morning on the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Oh, wow.
Which is when, not at a convention, but for that same story, I got to interview William Shatner, who is everything you want him to be. And I'll also add that on Fair Game, gosh, we keep referencing that. I got to interview Leonard Nimoy about something different. And then while we're at it, I'll let you know that there was one time I was getting off a plane and George Takei accidentally took my Toomey and I accidentally took his. So his young, spry husband, Doug Takei, kind of chased me down.
I believe you have the wrong suitcase.
And I was like, wait, I'm sorry. I really want to return this to your husband myself because I have been beamed up on Star Trek. And it didn't seem, I mean, George Takei is lovely, but it was a very brief interlude. Anyway, I was at a convention. I was interviewing people as myself for the show. And it was the big one. It was the Las Vegas convention.
Okay.
And then I was also like, is anybody going to recognize me? and basically nobody did. And I went over to a table and I found some cards of myself, right? Like trading cards. And so, of course, I bought those. And then I'm interviewing this family who's all dressed up in their Star Trek cosplay. And I asked them, what's your favorite? You know, I'm doing like Man on the Street. And I said, what's your favorite Star Trek show? And they say Deep Space Nine. And I give a pause because I'm waiting. and then I said, really, do you remember the episode with like people called them the Jack Pack and there's that Serena and she sang? And the dad goes, yeah. And then his eyes just got so big and his jaw dropped and he turned to his wife and he goes, that's her.
And that's amazing.
It was adorable. And like all of a sudden, he was so flustered because he felt like he should be apologetic toward me. And I was like, no.
I should have had to wait in line to speak to you.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I'll sign your suit. And he's like, no, that's okay. But that was like my big fan encounter that I had to induce. Although I'll tell you, like, my people are obviously, the Venn diagram overlaps with NPR folks. And so lots of wait, don't tell me tapings after which we sign people's programs. There's always somebody who's like, oh my gosh, I love Serena on Deep Space Nine, which is very sweet.
The sort of feeling of wanting to be recognized. And then also, I think probably a little bit appreciating the anonymity of, you know, being able to do your job without being swarmed by a bunch of
people.
You're
too generous, Adam. I would have loved to have been recognized.
But like in the conventions that Ben and I have been to, there's such a frequency of like recognizable people sitting behind a table with their name on it and no one talking to them.
That's
and something
painful.
About that is devastating for me. Like I always try to like at least look at them and smile or like say hello or whatever.
Yeah.
It's such a weird social obligation that I feel like just as a visitor, but like
I usually ask Rob to go say hi to them because I'm nervous, you know.
Aww. Right. That's very kind of you, Adam. That does like, yeah, it's sort of like the you see who the popular kids are at the conventions. Yeah. I remember seeing Terry Farrell? Is that like she, and she's hard to miss. She's very tall and beautiful. Mm-hmm. But she was kind of walking around, obviously infinitely more recognizable in that milieu than I am, and feeling like, oh gosh, come on, y'all, go mob her, do something.
Yeah. Like rooting for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's actually a good way to talk about your book, Approval Junkie, which is sort of about those issues, like the like trying to find a way to like seek approval from yourself and from others,
which is like the name of a game for many actors, at least at least a part of their career.
I haven't read the book yet, but I got myself a copy, and I was I was thinking about the that second audition for a character you'd already played as being slam dunk of approval.
So like, I love that you bring that up, and it was so. Those motherfuckers. Can I say that?
Please.
Those motherfuckers at Deep Space Nine. No, they were all very, very nice, but I guess they weren't sure if I had the chops and had me audition to play the character I created a year later after they invited back the rest of the Jack Pack. And what was interesting, I was never great at auditioning for film and TV. I would always get very nervous and try too hard. I was always better at auditioning for theater. But for this particular audition, I remember very well that I felt totally self-confident, like with an edge of like a kind of smiley fuck you. Like, there was
the
not...
best kind.
Right. There was not a point where I felt like I wasn't going to get it, which is probably I would have gone on to have several more series if I had always felt that way. But
if you could like bring that up in yourself for every audition.
Yeah. And frankly, at this point in my life, I do have more of that because I'm just more aware of like, here's what I'm really good at, y'all. Take it or leave it. But, you know, when you're 27 and being asked to try to audition to play yourself again, it's more challenging. But I went in and I was just sort of, I came from a place of where I was excited. If it's like, oh, well, if you're not sure if I can act, I'm excited to show you that I can. And I remember this. There's this one visual that kind of sums it up, which is that they not only made me come back once to audition, they made me come back again for that.
Wow.
Right. And when I got the call from my agent that they wanted to see me again, I actually got the script, the sides, as we call them, out of the trash. I'm sorry. I didn't have a separate recycling bin in 1998. And there was like a circle stain of a coffee that I had put coffee on it and then thrown it away, and like maybe even some coffee grounds. And I kind of held that as a badge of honor. I was like, I'm not printing these out again or faxing these to myself again.
Right.
And I like went in and I didn't care if they saw that it was like all crumpled and had coffee on it, because it was like, I'm done with you all. Like, just go ahead and cast me. And what I think is interesting is that nobody asked if I could sing.
That wasn't in the audition.
It wasn't in the audition. And here's a, I just
how could they not do that in the audition? That seems insane.
I guess because they hadn't asked the other three who were going to sing.
Yeah.
I guess they figured we can dub anyone we need to. But here's a little fact check because I heard y'all discuss the episode. I think one of you thought that I didn't know I could sing. Is that right?
Well, that was in the trivia for the episode, was that you realized it on set that you could.
That's like that was the note. I had been doing children's musical theater since I was 11. I played Sally Bowles. I played Sandy Dabrowski. I've done Sondheim in Europe and in America. When I heard you say that, I was like, well, no, I'm a musical theater geek.
Are you telling us that Memory Alpha, the fan wiki about Star Trek, has inaccurate information occasionally?
Can you believe that shit?
What?
Was it harder for you to sing atonally and weird in the beginning because you can sing so well? Is it tough to take some speed off the fastball?
Oh my God, that's so generous. It was hard. It was a little challenging. Yeah. And then it just felt so fun to sing. The only person who
I really felt seen when you sang badly. Like I felt like that was my moment of recognition of your character.
Yeah.
The only person who was dubbed was Tim. Was the actor who played Jack.
Yeah.
He was pissed too. He was not pissed that he
so
was dubbed.
So when you were
he
dating, did you always take
it.
Him to karaoke?
No, I just made him sing Dixie Chick songs to me. They were the Dixie Chicks back then. They're the Chicks now. Michael Keenan became a friend. I had his furniture in my home for a long time. He was marvelous. And sadly, he died. He died last year. But he was such a great actor. And Hillary Shepherd, who was then Hillary Shepherd Turner, had an actual rock band. So she was a legit singer.
I mean, she looks like she rocks.
Yeah.
You were talking about being so familiar with your character that you brought that confidence to your audition. But did you also bring that to a different director? Like, I think it's so interesting that you were directed by someone in the first episode, the mute episode, we could call it. Mm-hmm. But the second time around, did you ever have to teach Jonathan West? Like, no, this is actually what Serena would do here, or was there that kind of relationship between you two?
He did not give much direction whatsoever. I was sad. Jonathan West was lovely, really quiet guy, because he was usually the cinematographer for the show. Mm-hmm. So clearly he knew the show inside and out and knew what he was doing. And he had been the cinematographer on the first episode we did that Anson directed. So I just loved Anson so much that I was just sad he wasn't back for more fun.
Yeah.
But I think Jonathan, to his credit, stepped back and felt like the Jack Pack had it, like we all kind of knew, as you noted in one of
let
your
go
reviews,
and let Jack Pack
let go and let Jack Pack, because I mean really those characters are pretty one dimensional, right?
Yeah.
It's like the sex pot, the big baby in a onesie, and the angry paranoid guy
who drinks too much coffee.
Yeah. And Jonathan was lovely, but did not. I don't think there was much direction from him. Maybe because I just kind of knew what I was supposed to. I was born to play Serena Douglas.
Right. Have you thought about, as a parent, how old is the right age to start introducing the Star Trek to them?
Yes. My son is 9, and they're both very curious and nerdy, as one would want one's children
you
to be.
You don't want them to find it accidentally, right?
I don't want any other kids explaining it to them. Right.
Right.
And I don't want it handled by their ultra-progressive schools.
You don't want them to find Star Trek in the woods. You want to be there for that conversation.
I think it's now. I mean, then the question becomes, do you start with the original show? You know? I mean, what do you two think?
The vanity in me would be you've got to begin with my episodes that I was in.
Thank you.
That would be my impulse.
That's their primer. And then it's all downhill from there. They'll be like, Mommy, why aren't people singing in these episodes?
Yeah. I've watched 60 more episodes and you're not in any of them.
Their uncle, my brother, was obsessed with the original series and used to watch it after school in the 70s and 80s. And he wrote,
oh, man.
He spent a summer. We all had to keep our popsicle sticks. And he built the Starship Enterprise out of popsicle sticks. But he wrote his essay for Harvard about why he loved Star Trek so much. And then when he came out to me after grad school in the mid-90s, he ended up telling me that Spock and like the open-mindedness and the just mutual dignity that the original series and all the series have for all different kinds of people was helpful for him as like a closeted gay teen to feel like he was worthy.
That's really powerful. That's wonderful.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I'd love to see that popsicle stick Enterprise too.
Was it all differently colored because of the colors of the popsicles that were eaten?
It was a rainbow Enterprise.
Oh my gosh. It was like a pride flag.
It would
Enterprise.
Be, wouldn't it?
That's so great.
And I bet it smelled really, really fruity too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And it was sticky in a way you don't want your models of starships to be.
Yeah.
Oh man. Well, Faith, you've had such an interesting career. You've done so many things, like, you know, a podcast trailblazer. You're now on CBS Sunday Morning. I hear you panel on Wait, Don't Tell Me all the time.
Thank you. And you mentioned my book, and you know what? I'm going to be doing that as an off-Broadway show at the end of the year.
Cool. Wow. Okay. So people can pre-order tickets.
Oh my gosh,
do you have like a Bitly link?
Thank you for. I will soon. Honestly, I'm like just dealing with my contract now, and it will be announced, and it will just run for like a month at the end of the year. But it's a dream come true, and I wanna also thank you both for all of it. But you know, returning to seeing myself as an actor, like watching these episodes recently, gives me like a heart swell because it's my favorite thing to do. I love all the other stuff I do, but I miss acting. And so knowing that I was going to get to talk to you all about the acting experience, and then knowing that I'm moving toward performing on stage again, it just feels so good. So thank you for letting me share that news.
That's great.
Thank you for creating a really great character and coming on The Greatest Discovery to talk to us about her. It's been a real thrill to get to talk to you. I've been a fan for a really long time.
Thank you. That is so nice. And I love your show. You two are like the perfect. You know what I love is when people are totally irreverent about something they clearly have reverence for. Like that's alchemy. That's like a magical mix. That's something that only the initiated can truly appreciate, right? If you really love something, you can make fun of it, and you must. Yeah.
Truly, which is why I make jokes about empire wastes all the time.
You're welcome for that.
Nothing short of a delight to have you on the show, and we really, really appreciate it. Keep up all the great work, and break a leg with your one woman show. That's super cool.
Thank you so much. I hope if y'all get to New York, you can come. Thank you. I do have one mention of being beamed up on Star Trek in the show.
Cool.
Great.
Can people buy the book on
Amazon? At momandpopbookshop.org. Yes, you can Google Approval Junkie and find, and definitely buy the paperback because it has a better cover.
Okay. Wow.
Because the paperback has my mom's Coca-Cola cake recipe in it, and that's essential.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's nice. That's going to be necessary. Well, thank you so much for doing this, Faith. It's been
a real
delight.
Thank you both. And thank you, Rob.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages in the inbox. Want to go take a look with me?
Oh, yeah. I'm already there. I beat you to it, the Priority One inbox.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from your frog prince, and it's to Ben and Adam. Goes like this. Feeling a bit embarrassed about calling you guys embarrassing idiots in my last P1 on Greatest Gen. You're not idiots. I love you. Thank you for being a bright light of 4 to all Star Trek fans everywhere. Here's hoping you're blown out of an airlock real soon. Affectionately. Well.
Hey, that's sweet.
Yeah, that's very nice of you, your frog prince. I think that when we call ourselves embarrassing idiots, we do kind of unwittingly open the door for everyone else to call us embarrassing idiots. And
it's weird when we're nice to each other, it never opens the door for people to be nice to us.
Yeah, it doesn't change people's Reddit comments in the slightest.
No.
No harm, no foul. You're good in our book, your Frog Prince, but thank you for the P1.
Yeah, thanks for supporting the show, your Frog Prince. Then the second priority one message is from Sam, a DC homosexual. And it's to the Pride of DeSoto. And I only say it that way because I know Sam. The message goes like this: Happy Pride to all LGBTQ+ greatest discovery and greatest generation viewers, aka the Pride of DeSoto. Your memes, posts, and concern for each other has built a fabulous community that I'm so happy to be a member of. Also, shout out to Cut for Time and AC720 on the leaderboards from your boy, Jean-Luc Spincard. Those are our Peloton names, by the way. And then finally, and a your bit would be great for my 40th.
It's your 40th? I thought it was Sam's 40th. But I'm hearing it's yours. It can't be mine, Ben. It's definitely your 40th birthday. I mean, if it's your 40th birthday, it could be any time, really, because Yor is a time traveler. You know who would be terrible at doing Peloton is Yor. He hardly moves.
And he died in terrible pain.
You're one of our favorite friends of DeSoto, Sam.
And, that's right, Sam.
And happy Pride to the Pride of DeSoto. Indeed. Thank you for living your truth and being proud and in public about it. You rule.
Yeah, Sam's one of the greats.
All right. Well, if you'd like to leave a P1 here on The Greatest Discovery, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. We really appreciate it. Helps us fund the production of this program.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that. Being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Ben, that was big fun interviewing Faye Saley. She was just a delight to have on the show.
She was. We forgot to ask her if she had a drunk Shimoda on set.
Oh, that's, no.
That was a real boner move by us. We blew it.
Oh, shit. Oh, man.
This is what I get for writing down three questions before our interview. I was so excited. I, like, couldn't think straight.
Yeah, you were very cute, Ben, during that whole interview.
I was, like, honestly, like, a huge, huge fan of her podcast. It was, like... I think it started in like 2007, that show.
Yeah. I was immediately put off balance because I hadn't heard the show at all. And I'm like, oh, great. Ben and Faith are going to hit it off so, so well. And I'm just going to be in the background eating shit.
I guess, well, does that make us the Edward Larkins of this episode of The Greatest Discovery?
I think so. For the first time in a very long while, I think that makes the Larkins us.
Wow, look at us.
Look at me. I'm the Larkin now.
Wow. Well, thanks again to Faith Saley for taking all the time out of her busy schedule to record with us. And I think we will throw it to Rob for the end credits here on the show.
Thanks, Robs.
The Greatest Discovery is and will continue to be a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. The show, the podcast, this episode, they've all been produced by me, Rob Schulte. And as I wind down my time here at the Uxbridge Shimoda family, I just want to say thanks. This episode was spectacular, much like all the rest. And so are the Friends of DeSoto. Our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Make sure to check him out as well. His YouTube page has some amazing recipes. The Card Daddy Bill Tilly, personal friend, excellent social media director. He handles all the accounts. Greatest Trek on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch. If it's on social media, Bill's there. Remember to check out all the episodes that we've put together here on The Greatest Discovery. They're worth a re-listen. Maybe find something in the edit that has lasted the test of time. Thank you so much. We'll see you on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
Yeah, you got it, Ben.
All right.
Do you
welcome
wait,
to
wait,
the...
I'm sorry, Ben. Ben, why do you have a Star Trek insignia on your microphone, but Adam does not?
This was sent in by a listener, and they only sent one.
It happens all the time.
It's
I'm gonna send this... you something, Adam. I don't know what it is. But...
Thank you. Just to me though, okay?
Yes, of course.
The horrifying truth about this thing is that this is not meant for a microphone, it's meant for a penis. It is a penis costume that somebody ordered for us off of a penis costume Etsy shop.
Wait, have you already discussed this on the show? Not
well,
enough.
We discussed it.
Not enough.
We discussed it when we received it, but
it deserves
yeah.
its own episode.
I kind of like that it's just kind of an Easter egg when anybody sees the microphone that's actually what that
is. Okay, first of all, I don't want you to call it a penis costume. I want you to call it a penis cozy. And second of all, I hope that you refer to your penis as your mic.
Every time I've seen it, I would definitely call it a condenser.
I hope you add in a rim shot.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.